wonder why some leaders face scandals while others thrive ethically, and maybe they seem to be Teflon coated. Ethics violations can sneak up on you and erode your area's performance. Welcome to Speak Up, the podcast for high-performing introverts, including you social introverts, where we reveal the charisma and communication secrets of the A-listers so that you get the recognition and the opportunities you deserve. I'm your host, Laura Camacho, your magical communication godmother, coach, and strategist. And remember that our episodes now come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. As someone who takes ethics seriously, you're likely deeply invested in having a culture of integrity, right? But how do you do that? How do you make sure that things are on the up and up? So this interview actually was much more interesting than I thought it would be. The ethics part is, I think we tend to underestimate it if we're ethical because we project our own values onto other people. But there's a close relationship between ethical perceptions and performance. That's one of the big takeaways. We talk about practical strategies to cultivate a workplace culture that attracts top talent and inspires loyalty. It turns out that's another connecting area with ethics. And then some danger, some risk, some liabilities you may encounter and what to do about those and how to prevent, you know, some sticky situations. So you're going to love this episode. We have a special guest today who I'm going to grill without mercy. His name is Rick Swiegen, and he is conversing with us from the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He has recently written a book called The Practice of Ethical Leadership. And so we're going to learn, first of all, why is this necessary? So, Rick, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about your journey, like what possessed you to write this book, and tell us, like, why do we need this? And I guess it's the idealized self that we think, I'm ethical, you're ethical, so what's the problem?
And that's a great way to start. Boy, that's a lot of questions. So yes. First of all, thank you for having me. So let me start with kind of the latter portion of your question about why do we need it in a couple of ways. One, and this is kind of the transparent piece of this. I mean, when I speak to people in groups and you say to them, how many of you consider yourself to be ethical, moral, law-abiding? Everybody raises their hand, right?
Yeah.
Me too. But something happens out there that we don't have. Look at all the scandals we see in various organizations, whether they're for-profit or non-profit. Something gets in the way, and a lot of that, I believe, is leadership. A lack of leadership with a strong moral foundation. Okay, and we can come back to that. So that's one part of it. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You can see on a daily basis, we have organizations that unfortunately are run by people who aren't what we would consider ethical. I think there are practical reasons for it as well. And let me speak to the practical reasons. The research that I've seen says that ethical organizations perform better than non-ethical organizations. So on traditional business metrics, whether you're for-profit or non-profit, the data suggests that you perform better. Now, that may be simply a matter of focus, right? I mean, if you're focusing on anything, you perform better, but the data is there. The second part of that, the second reason for it, I think, is people want to work for an organization that stands for something greater than widgets and the bottom line. That is strongly supported by Gen Z, the younger people coming into the workforce. And frankly, I find appealing to myself. I want to be working for places that have value beyond what they produce on a daily basis. And I think that speaks again to ethical leadership. You need leaders who recognize that sense of creating greater value. And then the last reason, and this is a little bit more negative, but I think it's important as well. You know, put it as bluntly as I can, nobody wants to be Boeing. And we can go into the details on that. And the real question is, how do you know you're not?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, because you and I follow the news, and I assume your listeners do as well. And I'm not saying the leaders at Boeing are necessarily unethical on a human basis, but they made decisions in the organization that jeopardized their passengers, jeopardized others, et cetera. And that has dramatic impact on us as consumers. And I don't know about you, I travel a fair amount, have for my entire life. I never paid any attention to what plane I went on. I just got on the plane and went. And now I do. I look pretty carefully to see what am I flying on, because I'm like everybody else and I have doubts. So my point being with that is, if you have a misstep ethically, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit, the impact on customer trust, loyalty, and buying dramatic. So that's the quick version.
Very helpful. When you first said that ethical companies perform better, you know, I'm just a little, I don't know, skeptical of the elites or something, but I'm thinking, yeah, because nobody's stealing the money.
that may be part of it. We use two examples in the book that I'll share with your audience because I think they're germane. I think the truly ethical companies are companies that make decisions that potentially does impact the bottom line. And let me give you an example from my hometown. So Dick's Sporting Goods is headquartered in Pittsburgh. The guy who was the CEO at the time, a guy by the name of Ed Stack, when I say at the time, he made a decision, and Dick's sells a lot of firearms. They sell hunting rifles, they sell handguns historically, and they sold assault rifles for a long period of time. He made a decision after one of the mass shootings, I think it was Sandy Hook, to pull the assault rifles out of his stores. He said, "We are not going to do that. You can make all the arguments you want about who, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people, but assault weapons give you the capability of killing more people." That has real impact on their bottom line. They sold a lot of those weapons. They made a number of their customers angry. But to me, that's what an ethical leader does. They take a stand, which in some cases has an impact on the bottom line.
Well, it's having skin in the game, and you have so much more credibility when it's just not all talk, 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 but
absolutely, absolutely
risking your profitability. So, Rick, I'm imagining that, of course, I think of myself as extremely highly ethical. So I'm guessing that the road to perdition, the road to making those ethical errors, is, say, because pressure for profits, pressure for searches to meet certain KPIs, public pressure for this or that. But it must start with something small, doesn't it?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I think it starts in multiple ways.
Okay.
The most classic way that that road starts is with the reward system that exists within an organization. If you look at some of the major failings recently, Enron, for example, Wells Fargo, where they were falsifying records, all of that was driven by, first of all, it's driven by the opportunity to make a lot of money, and it appeals to greed. So if I'm given an opportunity to make a lot of money and I can cut corners and nobody stops me, I'm going to do it. So to me, that's the simplest place it starts. What do you reward in an organization? And I guess secondly, the second way I would say that is, who are your heroes in the organization? And I worked in sales for a number of years. And if the messages corporately are, well, our heroes are the people who made the big sale, did something spectacular relative to customer service, brought in a lot of revenue, there's nothing wrong with those messages per se, but we're not paying as much attention to rewarding Laura because she did the right thing in this situation. And very quickly, it becomes a stimulus response environment, and people respond to what the stimulus is. If we could eliminate greed, lust, and a number of other sins,
gluttony,
be home free.
Yes.
But that's not the reality. And no organization can eliminate that either, but they can make strong efforts to do so.
So the first thing is to look at your compensation reward system, because it doesn't even have to be monetary compensation, what gets rewarded.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, if I had my druthers, and, you know, I do this, you'd go out and assess through a survey basis your employees' viewpoints on that. And because I can guarantee you, and you've been around as well as long as I have, what I see at the top is way different than what people see at the bottom, okay? Yes. The CEO can sit in the corner office and say, we have an ethical organization. Look, we have a compliance group. We have an ethics group. And the people at the bottom see something entirely different. So I think it starts with a survey. And some of it's human. It's not all compensation. Am I treated fairly as an employee? All the data suggests if I'm treated fairly, justly, I'm going to behave that way with others. If I see my leaders modeling that kind of behavior as well, I'm more likely to do it. So I would start with a survey that gets at some of the pieces around reward and recognition.
Yeah. So what I'm taking so far, if I want to be an ethical leader, I need to look at what is being rewarded in my purview. And doing a survey, of course, is to test, you know, your perception versus the other level's perceptions. And being treated fairly is an important component. And also having a purpose greater than just making the widgets.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I mean, I think some of the components on that are, one of the things that we think is a key variable is safety. I mean, I think safety is an ethical issue. And I don't just mean physical safety, I mean psychological safety. Does my organization look out for my safety psychologically and physically on a consistent basis? Are they concerned enough about me to pay attention to that? And we being my co-author and myself, kind of lump both psychological and personal safety into one component. But I think it's an ethical issue. That's why I used the Boeing example earlier, because there's a situation where really the product they're producing is life and death for their customers. And that fundamentally is an ethical issue. If you take your eyes off that ball, it's a huge problem.
It definitely is. So let's say that you work for a large company, you're a mid-level manager, let's say you're a director, and so you're not directly influencing the board, but you want your team to be ethical. Even if you're an engineering team or a finance team, like we would start by like doing a survey, maybe having a conversation with our colleagues and the people that work for us. And
yeah, I think so. I mean, I think and I work a lot with frontline supervisors and mid-level managers. When you're in that position where I can't really shape the overall organization, right?
Right.
But I can shape my work unit.
Right.
And shape the culture of it. I think the key issues around ethics are transparency. And what I mean by that is I need to be willing to share with my team. I need to share with them the reasons behind my decision. I need to be willing to share doubts with them.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I need to ask their opinion, because when you're in the ethical realm, if you will, and I am not an ethicist by training, by the way, when you're in the ethical realm, it's usually not black and white, right?
Right, right.
So being willing to be genuine and sharing with people, really, really critical. That's the behavior from the leader. And I think the other part that is important is being open to disagreement. That's not saying you have to accept everybody's idea, but being willing to have people disagree with you and feeling that they can speak up in safety, goes back to safety again, also really, really important.
I'm glad you brought that up because it keeps you honest, because the higher you go up in the organization, as you well know, the less easy it is for people to share, to be transparent with you, the boss, especially when there's problems, which is mostly when you need to know.
That's exactly right. I mean, when we do surveys with organizations, I mean, we survey, obviously, the senior leaders, we survey the middle-level managers, and we survey the lower-level, the employees. The reason for that is perceptions vary across all three groups. And obviously, as well, to your audience, I can be a mid-level manager and have a really ethical culture within my group, within an organization that may not be ethical.
Correct.
So there's individual variance on that as well. And it honestly, it, at the end of the day, it really does come back to leaders, in my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, well, and you've got the research to back it too. So we can say that the dangers of not having the ethical leadership, I want to talk about that a little bit more, because we talked about, yeah, with Boeing, of course, there's fraud, there's actual physical danger. But let's think about before it, you know, brings the company down, what are the hazards when you're not known for being ethical
Let me use the NRA for just a second. When the NRA, when it started to appear there were problems at the top, misuse of funds, et cetera, it got in the paper. What happened? Well, the membership dropped by about 20% immediately. Long-term, by the way, and you know this as well as I, that's leading to criminal indictments and reimbursement and those kinds of things. And my point with that is I think there's erosion at the seams, if you will.
Yes.
It's not immediate. What are the indicators? I mean, if you're in a small town or a smaller community, you know that by what your neighbors are saying. Hey, you know, you guys aren't concerned about us. You're not concerned about the environment. We don't see you reaching out. You hear that talk. I think of the power plants that I've driven by in my career. And, you know, they have great controls over emissions and those kinds of things. They do a terrific job of monitoring that. But people see that. You know, if you're dumping pollutants into a river, they know it. So some of that is just an awareness of the environment. I think people do an environmental scan and pick up those subtle cues that say, this company is not behaving the way I want them to.
Right. I love that term of erosion, because that to me is like, by not being proactively making an effort to be ethical, then you're susceptible to erosion, which can happen imperceptibly.
Yeah. I mean, I draw the parallels to safety. I mean, if I'm not eternally vigilant about safety, top to bottom in my organization, on a daily basis, I'm putting people at risk. Nothing may happen today, nothing may happen tomorrow, but it requires constant vigilance. I think that same focus needs to be applied when you're talking about, are we an ethical organization? Are we doing the right thing? That's a continual question. And that's not saying you are misbehaving in any way, shape, or form, but it's the attention paid to it and the focus on a daily basis. I talk with a lot of leaders in my career, particularly in manufacturing environments, who will go home and say, at the end of the day, I evaluate my performance on, did I keep everybody safe? Pretty simple, but highly ethical as well. I think the true ethical leader does two things. He or she goes home at the end of the day and said, did I keep everybody safe and did I do the right thing?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm only going to give an example. You brought back a memory about the safety issue with also from the airline industry. So I taught a group of senior leaders from Delta Airlines here in Charles. They were from Atlanta, I think. I mean, I know that Delta's in Atlanta, but I think everybody flew in on the morning flight from Atlanta, and we were at the College of Charleston campus, and I was, you know, ready to start my workshop, and they went through like a safety check of the building and where the emergency exits were, and I was like, cognitive dissonance, like, what's going on? I had never seen that before, and I'm right. Like, we're not in an airplane. You know, that was the top person in the group was the COO. I haven't thought about that in years, but that's an example of what it's like, because you could say nobody was looking. I mean, Laura Camacho is nobody. The press wasn't there. They didn't have to do that. Nobody would have ever known, because I didn't know that they should have been doing that, even if I wanted to be a corporate spy or something. But they did that, you know, whatever their safety check, like it was done.
I think that's a great comparison. I mean, most of my background's in manufacturing. Good places, a lot of places, most places I work with run a safety huddle in the morning before the shift starts or a shift change. Get together. What are we doing today? What are the procedures we follow? Any questions about doing this safely? Do we have any of those kinds of questions? I think it's the same attention ethical issue to say, okay, if you're doing a huddle in the morning where you're talking about what's going on today, you're planning the day out, or you're doing a wrap-up and shift change at the end of the day, it's asking, did we do the right thing? Are there any questions about decisions we made? Did we put anybody at risk? It's extending that safety analogy and comparison you just described to say, I can do that with my people on a daily basis. What's the value? The value on that is, as if I'm a leader, first level on the floor, I'm credible with my people because I'm concerned about them. I'm open to them. I'm demonstrating trust on a constant basis. end of the day, people are going to see you as an ethical leader to do those kinds of things.
Yes. And I think outside of manufacturing, which is my world, I'm thinking of, you know, say software or finance.
Absolutely.
Or insurance. It's psychological safety. You know, a fully remote team all over the globe. Some of my clients, nobody's in the same time zone. So it's not that they're in a factory where somebody's arm's going to get chopped off, but have they been outside today?
You raised the current can of worms right now with the whole AI issue.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think of the issues associated with AI. And it's not just AI itself. Implications on the workplace. A lot of people have fear, my job going to be taken because
yes.
AI can do it. To me, it's too early to pass judgment on AI because I think anybody in their right mind should have some concerns about it and also see some pluses. But you got to talk about that.
Yes.
I mean, that's an ethical issue. What do we do about AI in our workplace? If we have a product, communications being a great case in point, if we're putting out written material, AI can do a really good job on that. Do we acknowledge that it's AI generated or is it us? I mean, talk about an area that's rife with opportunity for discussion. That's it.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I just attended in Charleston every year. We have a short 1 or 2 day tech conference called Big South. And this year, I always volunteer. And this year's theme was AI. Ethics is a huge AI issue. But just to share with our audience, guys, what I heard is that some companies, and I'm talking about ChatGPT and that the generator of text, okay? But just also code and all kinds of things. Like some companies are not allowing it at all. Some companies are allowing people to look at it, but not to hit the copy button. And then other companies are, you know, like, do whatever. And I mean, I don't know what the right approach is.
I've seen other companies that have generated watermarks that say, you know, generated by ChatGPT or assisted by artificial intelligence. So it's a constant ongoing issue. I think, or
yes,
will be for any of us in the workforce.
It definitely will be. And yeah, that's something that we need to have our eye on. And I think that your practices, you know, the name of Rick's book is The Practice of Ethical Leadership. So Rick is a very practical guy, which I love. This is not about esoteric theories. It's about today in 2024, AI is, you know, on the horizon. It's here. How can we keep people safe? But maybe, is AI going to threaten people? Well, actually, you know, AI has this issue called hallucinations where it does come up with stuff that's completely false. And so if you do use something from AI and it turns out to be a lie, I mean, like a decision could be made on that information that actually does harm people.
Right. So, it's still garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. But you don't see what's going in. You just see you can see your query, but you don't know where all the database is.
Let me make a side comment, Laura.
Yeah.
You said at the outset that, and we talked about this briefly, that many of the people who listen to you are classic introverts, and I am
yes.
one. Okay?
Yes.
I think introverts, and I'll use myself as an example, have a critical role in the ethical culture.
Ooh.
And I say that because, I'll generalize here, most of us have a tendency to kind of withdraw and process. I'm not going to be the first one to speak. Okay. But I am for sure a barometer of free speech, meaning, and here's where I think the critical role is. If I can process and then come back to the table and say, I'm concerned about this, I'm worried about this, I have this concern, you probably have a pretty ethical culture. Culture is open to me. If I can't do that, then you got a problem. Introverts are the canary in the coal mine. And if we can't raise our voice appropriately and raise concerns, then there are problems with the culture.
Absolutely. I love that. I never thought, how important are we introverts? Yes, because we don't just fly off the handle typically. We process internally. We take time to think. We actually think about things before we say them usually. And this is another play to the introvert's strength is to like go deeper. You know, you're going to be thinking about it. So what is this a symptom of that's deeper. And now we know that we could, you know, take a look at the ethical framework. We could send out a survey. We could call Rick. I'm so happy we're getting this on the radar right now.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel to me that our world is a little bit, meaning a lot more chaotic. And I think ethics can like get swept under the rug because we're so busy trying to do everything else.
This is a complete aside, but I'll make it. Again, thinking about your audience, read the book Quiet. Boy, that was a life changer for me.
Yes,
it probably came out 15 years ago now, maybe?
Yep.
At least 10. And it's all about introverts and how valuable we are and our perspective is. And I found that life-affirming. So not my book, but boy, if you haven't read it, I recommend it to your listeners.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, that was life-changing. In fact, my company is 15 years old, and it was that book that helped me see that I could focus my work working with the introverted half of the workforce. I mean, I work with everybody, but that's my focus is on the introverts because I get it. I know all the things.
A couple other comments, if I can, because I know we're close on time here. One is if I'm a leader, this is gross generalization, I don't think sending people to training necessarily works. And let me say what I mean by that. If, let's say, sexual harassment or diversity is an issue in the workplace, I can send somebody to class and they can learn about sexual harassment. They can learn about the diversity. They can probably pass the test.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But does it change behavior? In some cases, maybe, but probably not. I think the leader's role is to really grapple with his or her team on real-life moral dilemmas that they face. I mean, how do we handle in our workplace if somebody's behaving inappropriately? Because there's no right or wrong answer to it, right? But what do we do about that? I think that's really where people learn, okay? I also think you can apply that same methodology, if you will, to hiring new leaders. So if you're in a position to hire leaders, I think what you want is to have the ability to see how do they reason about moral issues, or do they? So giving them some moral dilemmas, ethical dilemmas in the interview process really opens the door to how people reason about moral issues. And again, I will say this with caution, but do they really reason about moral issues? Because for some people, it's all black and white. But you want to know that they think about that because it's a key criteria in ethical leadership. I have to see the ethical world first before I can lead in it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I like how you're putting so much emphasis on the leader being, not saying. There's this, which isn't very often I get on the topic when people talk so much about, I'm so transparent and I'm so ethical. I remember the Ralph Waldo Emerson said, the louder he spoke of his honor, the faster we counted our spoons.
Right.
So you need to have conversations. But I want to kind of recap the things, the practical takeaways I'm seeing for those of us that were just maybe taking this topic of ethical leadership and really giving it a higher priority, moving it up to the top of the list. Because I think that if you work on the ethical part, then things like sexual harassment, diversity issues might be taken care of in that way. Is that possible?
That's my premise. If you're focusing on doing the right thing, which is ethical leadership, that permeates the organization. And what's doing the right thing? Well, doing the right thing is treating people as individuals, treating everyone fairly. If you take that stance to begin with, then I think it does have that impact on the organization.
Right. And doing the right thing, I think that one of the takeaways is thinking about safety, which is more obvious if you're in manufacturing. But if you're not, especially with the fully remote workers, you know, mental health is an issue.
Right.
Absolutely. People feel, especially introverts, what happens to them? Or to us, if we speak up about an issue, if somebody pushes back, is that encouraged? Is it tolerated? Is it punished? Incorporating an ethical component to when you're interviewing people, consider having a survey to test other perspectives, even just having conversations with your team or your group about it, is that gives you some feedback and some points of view about how other people are perceiving, because you might have a blind spot. You might think, I'm the most ethical leader there ever was, and find out that, you know, for whatever reason, there's somebody on your team that doesn't feel like he or she can speak up with you.
Predicting ethical behavior, I think, is difficult to do. The best predictor you have is how people have behaved in the past. I don't care if you're hiring somebody to code or do other things in the organization, you're hiring an entry-level factory worker. Have they behaved ethically in the past? And you can ask those kinds of questions. You know, give me an example of a tough decision you made previously. Mace, give me a time where it was not black and white and you had to make a decision. How did you do that? So you can get an understanding of how they behaved in the decisions they make, which is a better predictor of how they'll behave in the job if you promote them or hire them than giving them hypothetical situations.
Oh, well, there's a experience from the trenches there. Thank you so much. Now, this has been so insightful and really giving us, I think, a different aspect of our careers and our work to think about that actually can make our work more meaningful, make us more effective leaders, and maybe address, maybe there's issues that on the surface look like, you know, conflict or some kind of interpersonal lack of alignment, but maybe underneath that, there's not a solid sense that we are an ethical company. And that's, I think, an interesting line of thought. I thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great fun. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Have a good one. And I'll catch everyone on the next episode. So that was interesting, wasn't it? It really makes you think about ethics in a different way. So I'm sure you got so much value from this interview with Rick. And if you're not getting our weekly communication dispatch, please, without delay, visit www.speakupwithlaura.com. And I will catch you on the next episode. Have a great one. Take care. Bye-bye.